Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Heart of Sports with Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen. We are thrilled to join you on 610 ESPN, ready to help you move into the weekend talking about all the news in the world of sports. Jeff, it's the middle of the summer, and it's really not very quiet right now.
You can keep talking. I'm eating my Cracker Jacks. I'm trying to find
out. Are you really playing with Cracker Jacks?
I'm trying to find out what the prize is.
You couldn't do this before we went on
there? Yeah, it's only a tattoo again. There's a ton of stuff going on. I mean, the story.
Thank you for paying attention.
I know.
To the intro.
With regard to the Chase Utley story,
I didn't even introduce that yet.
Go ahead. While
Jeff was opening his Cracker Jack tattoo that he didn't want at the beginning of the show, if you've missed it, Chase Utley has a press conference called for this afternoon. He's going to announce that he's retiring at the end of the season. Now that our listeners have some context, Jeff, go ahead and offer your opinion.
It'll be a sad day when he retires, but I think it's probably time. I'm glad he's announcing it now so that when he comes here next week that the fans can honor him, and I hope that
Do you think that's why he's announcing it now?
I don't know why. I don't know what other reason there would be. So it makes sense that that's what he's doing, although he could have made the announcement while he was here. I know I'll want to go buy a ticket to see him play. I just hope – I mean, the Dodgers are independent, right? I mean, they're going to be in a race, so – they can't just put him in for the sake of putting him in, even though it is, you know, all-star break time. I hope the Dodgers put him in. At least I would assume the first game. Maybe they'll release the lineups early. You know, something to let the fans.
The Phillies are hoping they release the lineups early, yeah. So that they can sell a couple extra tickets for the game. It's the end of an era with these players starting to retire. You and I were talking about, you know, you have Worth, who retired now, and Jimmy's retired, and you've got Chooch out of, and so
who's left? So as far as I know, I think it's Hamels. No, it wasn't. And Hap was on that team, right?
That's right. Hap's still pitching.
Are those the only two guys left from the 2018
there may be
that are
like
still
a
playing?
Young player or bench player, but in terms of the core of the team, I think that's sort of where it is now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's an interesting time. Actually, there's a special on this weekend about the 2008 championship team on Sunday night that I was planning to watch.
It's hard to believe it's been 10 years.
Right?
Yeah. It really does seem like yesterday.
And it's been 10 long years of baseball in this city.
But you know, if you remember, when it was time to break up the team, they obviously Ruben waited too long to do it. But when they did it, you know, people sat there and weren't particularly, fans were saying, it's been too long, get out of here, the whole bit. And now, and people were right when they said, you know what, as time goes on, you'll see. And now we're at the point where time has passed, and now we can just remember this team fondly. And
start to see some of the players that they ended up getting as they moved these players on.
Yeah.
As they're moving,
especially
the
from
system.
That Hamels trade. But, I mean, you have Alfaro from the Hamels trade. You had Jake Thompson from that trade. You had Eichhoff from that trade. You had Nick Williams from that trade. For Rollins, you had Eflin. I mean, you got good players from the guys. Even though they waited too long, they got good players in return.
And we saw some of those players at AA at the All-Star game this week. We'll talk a little bit more about that in our High Hope
but,
show.
But I did want to say there was one guy that the Phillies did trade, and it was obviously after 2008, that it appears we should be going, whew, thank goodness we got rid of him when we did.
Oh,
did you see what Ken Giles did? So
yeah,
Ken Giles decides to curse out A.J. Hinch, who's like one of the nicest guys in baseball. And guess where he ended up the next day?
AAA. Look, you can't do that. You just can't do that. But it, you know, at the time there was so much talk and controversy over, do you trade Ken Giles, your potential future closer?
Mm-hmm.
And they did, and turns out that it worked out pretty well for them.
We're doing just fine.
Yeah, we're doing all right.
And the Astros won despite him, not because of him.
Did you have fun at the AA All-Star game? We'll talk more about it in the next segment.
I had a blast. I thought it was really well done. I think the Trenton Thunder deserve a big round of applause for how well they handled the situation and everything that they did there. But more the fact that you and I had fun, I think, was seeing the players have fun.
They did. And, you know, we'll have a couple interviews with some players later on the show. We did get to ask Tim Tebow a question at his media availability, which is kind of a circus, Jeff.
Just a tad bit, huh?
There's a lot of reporters who were at that game just to see Tim Tebow.
Yeah, and then a lot of them just left after Tim Tebow did his, you know, 5-10 minute thing. And, you know, what I came away from with Tim Tebow, besides
he
the fact...
He changed your mind.
He did. I mean, you had said, hey, why don't we go over and talk to Tim Tebow? And my response was, I don't... No interest. I've never been a fan one way or the other. It just he just didn't matter. And as I'm watching the interview, we're listening to other people talk to him, I'm realizing this poor guy gets the same questions everywhere he goes. And they are just dull. I mean, at some point, you got to find something else to talk to him about other than, you know, how does his faith play into his sport and what's it been like switching from football to baseball?
Or what's it like to drive on a bus for 6 or 8 hours?
Yeah.
Or, you know, all the regular. And that's why I think we'll have a comment that he gave on the question that you asked, which he reacted to. He really got engaged in when you asked him about sports specialization, which is a topic that we talk about on our show.
Yeah, and I found him to be very genuine.
He came across very well. You're also excited to be going to the Major League All-Star Game. You're just spending your summer at baseball games.
Yeah, well, that's the summer is work and baseball, and now it's
and now
combined.
Baseball is work.
Yeah, right. It'll be fun to see Aaron Nola. It looks like the Phillies are moving Nola up a day.
They are. He's going to pitch Saturday, so that he can pitch in the game.
Now the question is, if Scherzer doesn't pitch,
does Nola start?
Does Nola start? Yeah.
You would think that they would want to pitch Scherzer as the home pitcher in his own park.
Yeah, but the Nationals are in a pennant race too. So if Scherzer can only go Sunday. The way that the rule works is if you pitch on Sunday, you are not allowed to pitch in the All-Star game, regardless of whether you want to or not.
Look, he's the first homegrown pitcher to be named an All-Star since Cole Hamels in 2012 for the Phillies.
Yep.
His first half winning percentage is the highest of any Phillies starting pitcher with a minimum of 15 starts. He's got around 4 or fewer hits in his 11 of his last 16 games. He's just been dominant.
Yeah, middle of the road pitcher, huh?
He's
remember they drafted him and said, well, he's already peaked, he's a college player, he'll be a middle of the rotation guy or back of the rotation guy. Well, the guy's worked his tail off and he's now one of the top 4 or 5 pitchers in the National League.
Are you going to try and go down the night before and see Rhys Hoskins in the home run derby?
No.
How do you feel about Rhys Hoskins playing in the home run derby?
I don't want it. Look, I love Rhys Hoskins, but I there's something to that
about the struggles after.
Yes, there really is.
And he's finally playing better after the injury. He's in his groove and he's playing well. And
by the way, so can you name the last two Phillies to play in the home run to win the home run derby?
To win it?
Yeah.
No.
Ryan Howard.
Yeah.
And Bobby Abreu.
That's Bobby Abreu. And then he fell off the shelf.
Bobby Abreu couldn't hit the broadside of a barn if it was thrown at him after that. And it just there seems to be something to it. You're somehow, because of the number of times you're swinging in a short period of time, that you are screwing up your muscle memory. And I just don't want that to happen.
They will head into the weekend before the All-Star game with a 51 wins right
52
now,
52 and 40.
52 and 40. Mm-hmm. Last year, through 90 games, they were 30 and 60.
Just a small change.
Just a tad bit better. They're 30 and 16 at home.
Best record in the National League.
Yes.
Home record.
They didn't get their 50th win last season until August 31st. I mean, just think about how long of a summer that was last year.
Yeah, it was a long summer.
And
this year, it's going to be fun.
It is. The Phillies Phillies ranked first in the majors with .392 on base percentage from their cleanup spot. Carlos Santana's walking all over the place. You still have questions about him?
I just don't. Look, I still think Rhys Hoskins belongs at first base. You're just not going to be able to convince me otherwise.
I think Vinny belongs in the bullpen? You think Rhys?
I do believe Vinny belongs in the bullpen. I believe Rhys belongs at first base. And Carlos Santana seems like a good clubhouse guy. He's obviously patient because he walks a ton. But do you really need your cleanup hitter to be walking?
Well, that's you kind of want him to hit the ball out or
all right
play.
Well, look, I'm gonna try a segue here.
Yeah,
so we're just talking about walking a lot, so how about if we see if we can add Ollie to this?
Well, Ollie will be on in a second, so why don't you introduce who our guest is going to be so that our listeners know what's up.
So we are going to have on, if he's not already on, Ollie Horowitz, and Ollie is the author of the book An American Caddy in St. Andrews. Ollie, are you there?
I am. How's it going, Jeff?
Thanks for joining us.
Are you kidding? Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is Jason here with Jeff. When he approached me about having you on, he couldn't stop telling me all the different stories of the things that you've done. So you've given Jeff like constant entertainment for at least the last week, just
I'm glad
following
to hear it.
The places that you've gone.
You have my life, the life that I want. I still want my, just so it's clear, Jen and Alex, I still want you in it, but I want to do all the things that you're doing.
Well, the next one's I do, you can be my travel buddy on that.
I'll be your caddy.
That sounds good.
Ollie, be careful what you offer, okay? Jeff will call you back, and he'll take you up on that. Can you tell us how this all happened? I mean, I've watched the Open for years on TV to hear you were a caddy there. Tell our listeners a little bit about the life of Ollie getting to this point.
Sure. So I grew up in New York City. Actually just played Bethpage Black about 2 hours ago.
Jealous.
Came straight from the course to do the interview. And
see, that's not nice. Wait. See, that's not nice. That's just rubbing our noses in it.
Well, the course wasn't nice to me. It
oh,
kicked
okay.
my butt.
That makes us feel better about it.
The greens are awesome, by the way. So, yeah, I grew up in the city, and I grew up playing all the public golf courses in the Bronx and Staten Island and Brooklyn and Queens. There's, like 8 public courses in New York. And I started playing when I was 9, and I loved it. And we had this weird connection to St. Andrews, though, for a long time. My mom's English, and my great-uncle lived in St. Andrews, and not just lived there. He was he was kind of a local politician there for, like, 50 years in St. Andrews. So we always had this weird total insider connection there. So we started going when I was 12, maybe, to visit St. Andrews and to start playing golf there. And I always knew Uncle Ken as this eccentric old English hilarious great uncle with this funny giggle and a Jack Russell Terrier named Bonnie, and I loved it. But then I actually went to school there for my freshman year of college as a gap year, and I played on the golf team there, and I just loved it. And I started caddying that summer after the freshman year at St. Andrews, and that summer led to, as you know, many, many, many more summers of caddying there.
So what's it like to be an American golfer over at St. Andrews? I mean, you have kind of a unique story, even though you've had this connection. I mean, I dream of playing at that course. And I mean, I grew up working on the grounds crew at a local golf course, and you get to be on that beauty out there as a caddy. What's been the best experience for you as a caddy so far? I mean, obviously the people you've caddied with, athletes and non-athletes. I mean, you could probably tell us stories the rest of the show.
Well, it's great. I mean, I started caddying there when I was 18, just finished freshman year. I was a 1.8 handicap then, so I played okay, and I knew the course well because we played okay.
Jeff, yeah. I would kill for a 1.8 handicap.
Well, I probably shot 100 today, so that's not happening right now.
I'd kill for that too right now.
But, I showed up, but I thought, I caddied when I was 12, 13, 14. This will be easy to come in here at the old course caddy shack in St. Andrews and just waltz in. And, oh, my God, was that absolutely not the case, because the old Scottish guys just hated me because I was a student and I was 18. I was American. I talked a lot. And guess what? I was the scum of the caddy earth that first summer. They just hated me. And the first day I'm caddying for in this group of American women, and I was a shadow caddy. I wasn't even a trainee caddy then. I was a shadow. So what you do is you follow an older caddy around the course for this first round, and he's sort of your mentor. And so I thought this was going to go great, and I was happily chatting to the ladies by the first tee. And then as we're walking up, the old caddy grabs me aside and motioned to his mouth and said, see what I'm pointing to? Shut it. And that was day one of my caddy career.
That's
actually, since then, we've become very good friends, me and Kenny. But that was how it went for the first couple months. So just every day I was making the mistakes of the inner caddy code that no one teaches you. You're just thrown to the wolves when you start.
Well, so I'm going to be a little selfish here. My son is a caddy right now.
Oh, awesome.
He's 16. So what are these inner code taboo things
Jeff
that you're
hates,
not supposed to do?
By the way, Jeff
sure.
hates unwritten rules. It doesn't matter if it's baseball
And by the way, he doesn't listen to the show, so this is going to be great because I'm going to tell him to do all the things that you're
fantastic.
Saying not to do. Right.
No, that's how it goes. It's the hazing. I would say, number one is you have to respect the seniority. The guys who have been there forever, and again, I've caddied at St. Andrews, caddied there for 11 summers. That's nothing over there. There's guys that have caddied for 40 years, 50
kidding?
Years over there.
Wow.
So when you're out there, you defer to the older guys. You know, you defer to them. If you, you don't act showy, you don't question other caddy out on the course, even if he gave a wrong yardage off the tee, you don't question it. You don't act like a big shot. And guess what? You also have to pull a lot of the pins. That's another inner caddy
pull
thing.
Pull the pin.
You got to tend the pins, okay? If you get a reputation as not grabbing the pins, that's really bad in the shack.
Jeff, you need
like
to take
this back. Like, they'll
actually
say, like, what happened? You get hit with pins when you were a kid? What the hell?
Jeff, you need to take this back and make sure that Alex is prepared for what he
that's
has
right.
to do.
Oh,
yeah. So, I mean, you've had, along with athletes, you've had some famous non-athletes that you've caddied for. I mean, I saw Larry David, Bon Jovi, Huey Lewis. What's the best person that you've been with? Or that may be like choosing between what's your favorite
kid. Most fun.
what's the most fun you've had with non-athletes out there?
And by the way, we have a lot of slang on the golf course. And if you hit a putt and it comes up way short, that's a Bon Jovi halfway there.
Oh.
Yeah, we got a lot of them.
So you got them all out there.
Yeah, well, we have this really cool thing at the end of the season called the Dunhill. And it's coming up in October. It's the equivalent of AT&T Pebble Beach, but for the U.K., so it's at Carnoustie, Old Course, and Kings Barns. And it's a pro-am, celebrity pro-am.
That's where the Open is, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so we can talk about that later because I've caddied at Carnoustie and the Dunhill.
Oh, we got questions, don't worry.
Four, five, six times now. God, that's a scary course. that's the scariest of the three by far. But so many cool guys come and play there. So through the Dunhill, I've had, let's see, we had Michael Douglas in our group. We had Andy Garcia, Tico Torres, who's the drummer for Bon Jovi. And then you get put with so many pros. So we had Lee Westwood, Martin Keimer, Rory McIlroy. We had Dustin Johnson a couple years ago. That was pretty cool.
Nice.
He killed it.
He can drive it far
he
on that
course. Crushed it. Poor Hugh, because I caddy for Huey Lewis every year at that. And Hugh is a wonderful golfer. He's Huey Lewis of the news, as
but
you guys probably
know. You had an issue
with
him with a bunker, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's such a great moment. That was
the
2009
yeah. Dunhill Championship.
He couldn't get out, and then the bunker is so deep that no one in the crowd could see what he was doing in there, so he finally just threw the ball out to be funny, and guess what? It goes in, and everyone thought he holed it out. It was hilarious. It was so funny.
What did you write down on the card?
I that was pre-Oliver. That was a different caddy for Huey. That was back in 2009.
What did that caddy write down on the card?
Probably, I'll never forget that moment.
that's amazing.
It's great, and the Dunhill is a really fun event because the pros are having fun there. The celebrities are great, and it's a fun way to end the season because you are inside the ropes. You're walking alongside the pros, talking to Ernie Els, talking to Rory, and you're there. And a lot of the caddies guys are living, in a sense, they're living the life of their dreams because they all wanted to be pros like me. I did as well when we were kids, but in a sense, this is the next best thing because they're getting to make golf their lives and hanging with all the pros and stuff.
That's why we do a sports radio show because we're not going
exactly.
to play sports, so we just talk about it and then go to games.
Hey, speak for yourself. So, with regard to, there's one guy that you caddied for who's one of my favorites, Larry David.
Oh, my God.
Now, does he actually act like he does on his show?
Well, I've got great news here. He's exactly like he is in the show, except he's a really nice guy. But all of the neuroses are there. All of the nervousness and paranoia is there. He's a 15 handicap, but he gets really nervous in matches. And I think I played it cool for like 9 holes. And then I was like, hey, Larry, I know every single line to Curb Your Enthusiasm.
So you can
Jewish
still be
kid from New York City. It was the best 5 hours of my entire life.
So you're still a fan as you go through this. Like, it's for you, it's like, wow, I'm out here with people who I actually watch. And it's something that's exciting to you, it seems like, in your voice.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, what's really interesting is you get to meet these people, but it's not just meeting them, right? Like, you're not just shaking their hand. These guys are relying on you for 5 hours on a course with 30-mile-an-hour winds gusting to 50 and pop bunkers bigger than, like, the first floor of a house sometimes and rough and, you know, and it's raining and it's cold and your shower doesn't have hot water. It's like they rely on you. And so when Bill Clinton comes and plays the old course and my friend Kevin O'Donnell is caddying for him, Kevin didn't just meet a president of the United States. Like, he literally did battle with him. I think that's so cool. and everyone comes to the Old Course.
You're literally in the bunker with the president at that point.
Yeah.
Did he toss one out of the bunker?
Comes. Yeah.
pulled a Huey Lewis there.
Does he have a foot wedge?
So I have another question. Jeff told me about a golf course in Australia. And I want to hear about this longest golf course that you've played on.
I want to play.
Oh, yeah.
I want to play this golf course.
It sounds so cool. So
you guys got to do a live show from Nullarbor Links from that golf course.
That sounds fun.
So here's the deal with that. Here's the deal with that. This is so much fun. It's called Nullarbor Links. It is the longest golf course in the world because every hole is in a different town. Now, it takes 5 days to play because it's about 100 miles from every green to the next tee box.
That's a big golf course.
See, it's good.
It's right
by the
way, the Australian outback. So you're literally driving through the through the desert, through kangaroo-infested, like, roads. I hit and killed a wombat by accident on the second night of driving, which was terrifying.
Oh, no.
I don't have confirmation it died. I think I heard it very badly.
By the way,
you did
a better job explaining what it is than Jeff did, because when he explained it to me, I thought that literally it was just a really long golf course, and I was like, "Well, how many shots do you have?"
He's like, "How many strokes does it take to go 100 kilometers?
If it's 5 days. Like, I don't understand." So, how did this come about? This was truckers that they could go from town to town and
exactly.
And play?
So the Nullarbor is an incredibly long road that stretches through the outback, and it's basically just truckers. And so there was a humongously high rate of accidents on the road because it's just you have one stretch, which is the longest straightaway in all of Australia. Just there's no turn for like 8 hours or whatever. So people were falling asleep at the wheel and getting in accidents. So to sort of create a diversion and to stop the guys from, just driving all night, they would have they set up this golf course. And apparently the first year the golf course came into existence, it slashed accidents along the Nullarbor in half.
Wow.
Golf saves lives.
Yeah. So you're
That's
playing
their slogan.
In
yeah.
some of the craziest environments I've ever played golf in. You're playing it is rough and tumble. There's one hole that goes through a shooting range. There's another hole that goes across an airplane runway.
That sounds like both could be rather dangerous.
Yeah, it's very north by northwest.
You're like, you got a plane like landing as you putt. I mean, you don't need to tell the audience to be quiet if you got a jet engine over your head. But,
it's crazy. It was so much fun. And I was with one of my best friends, Miles Ashton, who actually we can talk about later, was my travel buddy in Nepal. But Miles and I played the golf course, and Miles is kind of a beginning golfer. So I gave him we decided to have a contest, and I gave him 30 shots on the front nine. And I'd made all of them up and was beating him after the front nine, so I gave him 50 more on the back nine. And then Miles started getting really, really good, and he beat me. And I think I shot 150, and he shot like 145, and he beat me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So let's get to Nepal. Like, 'cause the way that you and I caught up was I had seen a 60 Minutes story on a golfer in Nepal named Pratima. And I had reached out to see about her. And you responded to me. And so can you tell me a little bit about, and our audience, a little bit about who Pratima is and how you got involved?
Sure. So I was in Nepal 2 years ago with Miles and with our friend Vlad. And we were there first to climb to Everest Base Camp. But I was also writing a Golf Digest article. Actually, this one's for Lynx Magazine about all the golf courses in Nepal. Because there's 6 courses in Nepal, 700 golfers. It's Himalayan golf. And the courses are fantastic. So we're at the oldest course, Royal Nepal Golf Club. It's 100 years old as of last year. And so everybody at this course is telling us the same thing. They're like, you have to meet this girl, Pratima. And we're like, okay. So I meet Pratima. She comes up to meet us. At this point, she's 16 years old. She's the best female golfer in Nepal, number one, and lives in a shed on the fourth hole of Royal Nepal Golf Club. So literally, she lives in the maintenance shed. So her parents are essentially laborers on the course, both work on the golf course. They don't make a lot of money. She grew up in the shed, and it's just off the third green by the fourth tee. And so she came and did the interview with us, and it was wonderful, and she wore a nice golf shirt. I find out later that was the nicer of the two golf shirts that she owned.
Amazing.
And so I just think, oh my God, this is just ridiculous that the number one female golfer in Nepal is living in a shed. What a crazy, just, I don't even know where you would start with that, but I just said I want to tell people about her because this is amazing. So, you know, I've now caddied in St. Andrews for 11 summers. It's how I get to know people. It's how I'm, you know, comfortable with people on a golf course. And I thought, you know what? Let's play golf right now, and I'm going to caddy for you, Pratima, and let's just go play nine holes, and I want to hear about what's up. And so I took the bag, and she teed off on one, and we just went. And it was – I've done a lot of caddy rounds. That was my favorite caddy round of my entire life. It was just wonderful. Like, Vlad, Miles were following. I was caddying for Pratima, and people were watching from outside. Now, the course runs right alongside the ring road, and a lot of people look in – and are seeing Pratima playing, which is very strange in Nepal for a woman to be playing golf. It's very rare. And to see an American guy carrying her bag. So people were like stopping and looking. And I don't know, guys. It was just it was a very special 2 hours.
And where did she get her golf clubs?
So that's a great point. She was discovered by a pro at Rural Nepal at age 11. And RNGC, Rural Nepal Golf Club, gave her clubs. And the Nepal Golf Association saw that she was getting good, and so they gave her lessons. Her coach, Sachin Bhattari, is like the sweetest guy ever. He's been donating his lessons for free this entire time, and she got good, like, really fast. She started winning tournaments. She's won, like, 35 golf tournaments. So, guys, you go into the shed. The shed is, by the way, it's smaller than most people's kitchens. Right? Like, there's essentially 20% of the shed is for her and her mom and dad, and 80% of the shed are for lawnmowers. It's where all the equipment's kept.
My goodness.
So, right. So in this little shed, it's packed with, guess what? Trophies that she's won. It's just everywhere. Wow. It's trophies.
So, I mean, I could listen to you tell stories about her all day, but I have so many other questions I want to get to you before we get to the Open. I hear you've teed off from some unique locations. What's the highest place you've ever teed off from?
Sure. Well, the highest place was at Everest Base Camp, and that was 17,600 feet.
Is that when you taught
and,
the Sherpas
how to golf? I'd love to say that I crushed the ball, but I absolutely did not. I could barely tee it up. I was so tired and, you know, dealing with altitude sickness.
Did you find it?
I hit no. Well, guess what? I hit this really crappy low-line drive, and it went about 120 yards into a crevasse. And I was trying to collect it, you know, because I brought the ball all the way up with my driver from the bottom. And my our guide, Gelsen, our Sherpa guide, said, if you go into the crevasse, you will not come back out.
That's when you don't chase the ball and
right.
You just drop. And I heard you taught the Sherpas how to play a little bit, too.
You know, when I was going up there, I just had this golf club in my backpack, and it was sticking up, and it was drawing a lot of stares from everybody. People were like, who the hell is this idiot? Or also, what is that?
What is that?
It was a great conversation starter everywhere. And I was teaching, you know, some Sherpa how to play golf. So we ran into these assistant monks, or the apprentice monks, at about 13,000 feet, who were all about 11 years old. And I gave them a little golf lesson at like 13,000 feet, so that was fun.
You should have made them carry your bags.
But I do want to mention with Pratima that it's pretty amazing. A lot of cool stuff's happened, and ESPN did this big documentary on her that is now available to watch. It's called A Mountain to Climb.
Okay.
And the next step now, I think, is she might be coming to the U.S. for college.
How exciting is that for you to see?
Oh my! It's well, selfishly, it just makes me feel really good every time Pratima does something, you know, that makes me proud. It's just, it's super cool. I mean, she came over last year to live in California for a month and train with this wonderful pro, Don Parsons, who again donated all his time for free, and she got really good. She won a couple tournaments in California. And we've got this fundraiser we've been doing for her at teampratima.com, TEAMPRATIMA, Team Pratima. And the next step, guys, is this really could happen. She might be coming to the U.S. for college next year. So now, it's very exciting.
Now, has she played in tournaments on the LPGA Tour?
Not yet. Here's what I would say. Her ceiling is incredibly high. I don't know if the LPGA is her story. We'll see. I think she's good enough, but there's a long road to go, and the first step is you got to think, if she's at a Division I college playing college golf somewhere warm like California or Arizona or something, she's going to get so good. So let's see. You know, the journey for Pratima is just beginning.
By the way, speaking of the LPGA, we had somebody you might know on a couple weeks ago, Paula Kramer.
Oh, my God.
How cool is that? We heard you had fun at her birthday.
Well, I mean, I had fun. She probably didn't. I bought her a tequila shot for her 21st birthday at the Dunvegan. And it got roars from the crowd, from all the adults, but she was not, she wasn't so into it.
Yeah,
I did do a tequila shot with her. That was very fun.
We had on her a few weeks ago when she was playing at the LPGA in South Jersey.
Great.
She was great. She was a lot of fun to talk to. Your book, obviously, is An American Caddy in St. Andrews, so we'd be remiss if we don't ask you about the Open Championship before we let you go. What sets Carnoustie apart? You said it's probably the most difficult of the three courses. What is it that makes it so difficult besides the weather?
That's a great question. It's called Carnoustie. The nickname.
Okay.
And we have a rivalry between all the caddy shacks, like St. Andrews, Carnoustie, etc. And apparently, as the story goes, if American golfers are ever playing at Carnoustie, and they're like brutally overwhelmed with the course, and they ask their caddies, like, "Man, when did the easy holes start?" The caddies say, "When you get to St. Andrews."
Oh.
But Carnoustie is a beast. All right, here couple things. Every single tee shot, and this applies to the Dunhill as well for the amateur tees. Every tee shot, with the exception of probably the first hole, there are runouts to bunkers. Now that's not always the case, so you have to be so incredibly vigilant with your yardages and your lines off the tee, because if you let your focus go for one tee shot, you're in a bunker and they're pop bunkers.
You should just carry a beach chair if you're caddying for me, because we'd spend all day in the sand.
They're more at St. Andrews. There's 126 bunkers in St. Andrews, but the ones at Carnoustie are just as scary.
That's a lot of places to lose my golf ball.
And there's, you know, it's funny because you're so close to the water. You don't actually see the water from the course ever, but there's a lot of what we call burns, which are little streams. And they seem to run throughout the course a lot. The 16th hole, oh, my God, it's the hardest par 3 I've ever seen. It's like you're hitting guys will be hitting driver if they're into the wind sometimes. It's like a 270, 260 par 3.
A driver on a par 3?
Yeah. Oh, my God, it's crazy. 17 and 18 are beasts. I've asked a lot of tour caddies who I meet in the Dunhill, like, which course, not even just in the Dunhill, but which course keeps you up at night before tournaments, and all of them say Carnoustie. So it's like the tee shots that run onto these pop bunkers so easily, and the approach shots, almost every approach shot, you're just on edge. Like, it's visually very intimidating the entire time. So it's going to be a great test next week.
Who's going to win?
I'm going to completely watch this tournament differently now next week.
Yeah. Oh, good. Oh, cool. Well, you know, I love Ricky's chances next week, Ricky Fowler. I mean, that's not a very controversial opinion since he shot 64 on the opening day. But, you know, Ricky loves it over in Scotland. He loves the Scottish Open. I met him on the old course a couple summers ago when he was just playing. He let his caddy play, and he instead pushed his own cart, which I thought was really cool. But I'm going with Ricky next week. I think it's his time.
Well, we will be watching and we'll be following you because it's a fascinating story. Maybe we'll get to have you back on sometime. We really appreciate the time you gave
us. Well, hold on, Jason. You can have me and Ollie back on after we do our adventure.
That's very generous of you to offer yourself to come back with him after he caddies for
you. We really do appreciate
it. Ollie, you'll have to let me know if Jess sends an email without telling me after the show ends. But we really appreciate you coming on. Best of luck with the book and everything else. Thank you for your time.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Take care.
Take it easy. Jeff, I could have talked to him the rest of the show.
Yep.
I didn't want to get off there. That was a lot of fun. Good get there.
Let's go to break.
We've got baseball to talk about. Stick with us.
Are you looking for a lifeline? Verizon New Jersey Shares Communication Lifeline is a statewide nonprofit that provides assistance to individuals and families living in New Jersey, those who are in need of temporary help in paying their communication and energy bills. Want to know how to apply? All you need to do is call Verizon New Jersey Shares at 1-888-337-3339 or visit on the web at www.newjerseyshares.org. It's quick and easy to sign up, but remember, you must be a Verizon Residential Landline customer to apply for eligible programs. That's Verizon New Jersey Shares, keeping the lines of communication open for you and your family.
Taking you into the weekend with the latest news in the world of sports, with the biggest names on and off the field,
It's The Heart of Sports each and every Friday at 4 p.m. on 610 ESPN with former players, reporters, and commentators like Adam Schefter, John Runyon, Keith Jones, Trey Thomas, and Doug Glanville. Jason Springer and Jeff Cohen cover the agony and ecstasy of fandom while weaving in conversations about the impact of sports on society. That's The Heart of Sports, Fridays at 4 p.m. Welcome back to the High Hopes Philly Minor League Rundown on 610 ESPN. I'm Jason Springer here in studio with Jeff Cohen. Jeff, Wednesday night we are not in studio. We were at
Trenton. We were out in Trenton, and we were watching the All-Stars.
We were, and I have never – I've been to an All-Star game, minor league All-Star game, never covered one. And so that was a different experience getting to see what the players were like and
how much joy there is in the game.
Themselves. And, you know, I was saying to you, I was never the autograph guy. So to watch
the lines of autographs, for everybody who's listening at home, they try to visualize all around the stadium. They have tables set up,
lines everywhere.
You have lines of people going down the aisles of the stadium to have all these guys sign autographs.
Can I tell you the good thing that I found out though?
What was that?
While they were all in line for autographs, I went to the lack of line at the restaurant and got some food.
You did.
So I handled it that way.
Uh-huh. You got your chicken steak.
We were down there. We talked to some Reading Fightins. We'll play that soon.
Two of which hit home runs during the game, by the way. Zach Greene and Yan Hernandez hit
and
home runs.
David Grillon won the home run derby
yep.
the night before. Mm-hmm. It was electric at the ballpark from what we hear. So we'll have the interview with the Fightins in a second. But we got the chance, as we said earlier, to talk with Tim Tebow in his press availability. And, Jeff, why don't you tell them where your question came from, and let's play his answer for
As somebody who's coached kids, it always frustrates me that parents think that a kid should play the same sport year-round. It's not good for their bodies. I don't think it's good for their minds. And Tim Tebow summed up all the frustrations I had had for years. So why don't you play?
Tim, in this world of specialization for kids in sports, what would you say to parents who want to specialize their kids as opposed to diversify?
I can't stand it. I love that you just asked me that question. I can't stand it. I think that kids need to, if they want to play as many sports as possible, all the time, have fun, don't specialize in something, because it's more important to learn how to compete, how to win, how to lose, how to drive, how to push yourself, than it is to be able to turn to at 10 years old. Like, learn the fundamentals of sports more so than the skills that you just need with sports, because there's time that you can learn that. But a lot of kids they'll get burnt out because they play 150 baseball games and they don't do anything else. And so they lose that love and that passion rather than being able to learn how to compete. And, you know, I loved it for me when I was going from football to basketball to baseball, that other kids might have had a jump in a certain area. But I had a jump because I learned how to adapt back in football season, then adapt into basketball season, then adapt when I picked up a bat again. And I think that's such a big part of being an athlete and learning how to adjust and also having your body learn to compete and have different motor patterns and movements where you learn to be more of an athlete first than you do just skilled at 10, 11, 12 years of age.
I think what he said it all. I couldn't say it.
He got very animated. Mm-hmm. You know, he's good at answering questions in general. He's obviously done this before, but he got very engaged with the question that you had, and you could see that he has a passion about kids enjoying themselves playing sports.
And he's got a lot of knowledge that he can impart on people about it.
I'm not used to sort of the circus that surrounds a single athlete. You know, we've gone more when it's been us with the athletes
right.
in some of these games. So to see that, were you surprised at all by what went on? We had heard that it was the third time that he was in Trenton in a month, and every time he was there, it was the same thing.
It's the same questions. The same people come down from Connecticut and New York and Philadelphia. And so it was nice to see him get to talk about something that meant something to him as opposed to the standard question.
The cool thing was he couldn't wait to be done the interview and join his teammates.
Yeah.
He ran right out for the picture. They were all stretching. And, you know, obviously the media is there and the fans are there to follow him. And he's just doing his best to be another guy on the field.
Yeah.
Like, it's got to be awkward to want to be one of the guys. And everybody wants to stop you and make out like you're not one of the guys.
Well, yeah, because with the media session, you could interview any of the other guys one-on-one. With him, it was he stands at a podium, and there's 30 to 50 people there that are throwing questions at him.
Well, and we did get the opportunity to interview some of the guys one-on-one. In fact, after they finished stretching, We had Zach Green and Yan Hernandez come over. It was fun to see them there, Jeff.
They had a blast. And we started with Zach Green, and you'll see that Yan decided to join us.
Yan pops in mid-interview. Here we go.
So we're here at the All-Star Game with Zach Green. Zach, what's it like to have this experience this week?
It's been great. I mean, you know, like I've told a couple people, these guys are going to play in the big leagues. So it's great to be here, pick their brains, have fun with them, compete against them.
Anybody you were excited to see when you found out you were on the team?
Just the guys that I've competed against. You know, Rogers, he's a tremendous athlete on this team. We play Portland a lot. You know, and Akami's kind of near me in the clubhouse, so it was cool to talk to him a little bit. Just the guys that you've competed against, being in the same clubhouse as them, is kind of cool.
What's it like to come here with three of your other teammates? There's four of you guys here. We looked over the starting roster. Tonight has three Reading Phillies, a third of the lineup. What's that like to you to see?
It's great. I mean, when you're in the day in, day out of the grind, you lose sight of, a couple things, like one being that baseball's fun. And, to be here, take a step back and enjoy this with your teammates, it's a pretty cool experience.
So back in high school, you had a pretty famous teammate, huh?
Right.
So can you give us a little dirt on him?
You know what? I don't know if I would if I could, but I honestly can't. I mean, Reese is, he's the same guy he is now as he was in high school. Just a very humble dude and good at baseball as well.
So what's it been like? We've read about your struggles coming back from your Tommy John surgery. Mm-hmm. And something you said clicked in the Arizona Fall League. What was it that made that change for you?
Just kind of reps, being on the field and playing. There's nothing you can do to simulate a real, live game, especially against, high talented athletes. So just being out there every day playing and coming to the ballpark with the mindset that you're going to work hard and learn. I think all that kind of was a snowball effect.
Has it sunk in yet that you get to call yourself an all-star now?
Yeah. I mean, like you said, a couple other times I've, been an all-star. But, it's cool to be here. A lot of good, really good baseball players. I think that's the best part of it.
What's it like when you came up with Reese Hoskins and see the success that he's having as you now start to move through the system and realize the success you've hoped for? What's that like for you to see as you try to reunite with him? I saw you had said that you would get on base and he would knock you in. What would it mean to be able to do that again?
I mean, it'd be pretty special. Like I said, Reese is an absolutely great guy. And to watch him power through the minors like he did so fast, it might have been a shock for a lot of people, but to me, it really wasn't a surprise, and I couldn't have been happy for him. And all the success he's having now, cannot be happy for him.
So what are you looking forward to most with this?
I don't know. I mean, it's a Double-A All-Star game. It's, it's an honor to be here. So I think just kind of the pregame stuff, it'll be really cool to see everyone out here and getting ready for the game.
Looking forward to Bernie Williams warming up in the background.
Yeah.
Over there.
I know, Yan. Have you talked to Bernie yet?
No, yet.
So
I want to.
So
yeah.
John Hernandez is here with us, too. Bernie's over there warming up for his national anthem performance. We were asking, Zach, what's it like for you guys to be here together to be able to experience this as teammates?
Wow, this is a blast for us. I mean, with this bunch of players, a good player, future MLB players, I feel like Gray will be here, Green, Garcia, and Grillon that won yesterday the Home Run Derby. Enjoying the moment, that's it.
What was that like to see your boy win the Home Run Derby out there last night? I heard it was a fun night here.
It was great. I mean, they were yelling at him in Spanish, and I wish I knew what they were saying. But it was awesome. I mean, that guy, he does something every day that, the whole team just gets fired up about, in a positive way. So to see him, and he was having fun out there. I don't know if you guys watched it, but he was having a lot of fun, and it was really cool to see that out of him.
We heard the ballpark was electric last night.
Yeah, it was great.
So on our last visit to Reading, we heard that Davey was the clubhouse DJ.
Definitely.
So since he's won the Home Run Derby, does he get the honors in here?
He was just playing music
just
in there.
Music was
there.
Right?
Yeah, he was already. He's already. Yeah. He's already on DJ. Yeah.
All right, well, guys, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it, and good luck.
Thank you.
Jeff, watching them realize that Bernie Williams was warming up on guitar for the national anthem while they were hanging out on the field, they were just like kids.
Yeah, well, Yan clearly wanted to run over there.
Yeah, he seemed like he wanted his autograph. Uh-huh. Like it was pretty fun for him. And I mean, the smile on those guys' faces to be able to be participating in that with their peers. And like we said in the interview, you know, you take out the lineup card and three of the nine starters for the All-Star game are fighting Phils.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something that's – it's a cool experience for them to have together. But as a fan
they were fighting Phils because Zach Green was promoted
right after
the game.
We got him while he was there.
Yeah.
He's
the Iron Pigs.
He's an Iron Pig now, moved up to Lehigh Valley.
Yep.
Good for him for getting to have that experience, and now hopefully he keeps progressing in the system. He's overcome some injuries, and so you'd like to see him succeed.
Yeah, he had a Tommy John surgery. Had it really rough. He actually was Reese, if you didn't pick that up from the interview, he was actually Reese Hoskins' teammate in high school.
That must have been a really good team.
Batted 3 and 4 in the lineup.
If they had any type of pitching, they must have played really well. It was, you know, it's again, in that atmosphere, having them talk about what it was like during the home run derby with their own guy winning and the crowd going crazy, like that was fun. You could see that they were into him being a part of it as well.
Yeah,
it was definitely a good time. So you know, it's second half of the season now. Teams get back at it. We're actually going to head back out to Reading this coming weekend.
Yep. Not this weekend. Next weekend. Yeah.
Well, not tomorrow.
Yeah, not tomorrow. The next week.
Next weekend.
But in the meantime, Cornelius Randolph, who we had a chance to talk to last time we were there, has started to pick it up a little bit, and now he was the Phillies Minor League Player of the Week last week.
And when we talked to him a few weeks ago, it was actually his 21st birthday, so here you go, catch that interview. We are here at Reading today with the birthday boy, Cornelius Randolph. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Don't worry, we'll have... We are here at Reading today with the birthday boy, Cornelius Randolph. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Don't worry, we'll have Jeff sing later. We won't make him jump out of a cake, though. So you're here at the ballpark.
You just ruined the whole interview.
Don't worry. People are struggling right now. So you're here at the ballpark early on your birthday. What's it like to be able to come to the ballpark every day? We're sitting right by the field looking out at this beautiful patch of grass you get to plow on every day.
Yeah.
What's it like for you to be able to come here and this is your job?
It's a blessing. A lot of people don't get the opportunity really to do this. So it's really a blessing to be able to play a game I love every single day.
So you were a first-round draft pick in 2015. What's it like to come in with those additional expectations? You know, is that pressure on you that you've had to overcome, or is it just something you've gotten used to at this point?
I've kind of gotten used to it at this point. I mean, at the beginning of my career, it was kind of added pressure, but now it's just like, go out here and play.
What was it like to go straight from high school to the minor leagues?
It was a big learning curve. I mean, I didn't really get the college arms and stuff that I would see in pro ball. So, I mean, it was a learning curve, but, I mean, I just had to mature quicker.
What was the biggest adjustment that you faced, you know, going from playing ball in high school to this regimen of being a professional and it's your job now, you have to do this every day?
The biggest change would be not going to school. that would honestly be the biggest change. Like, I would literally just go to the field every day and go back to the apartment and just do every single day.
So where were you when you found out you were being drafted?
I was in South Carolina, Summit, South Carolina with my family.
And did they call you, or how'd you find out? Were you watching TV?
I found out on TV.
Yeah?
Yeah, I found out when they called my name on TV, that's when I found out.
And what was your reaction when you found out you were a first-round pick?
I was shocked. I was just like, I mean, I heard buzz that I was going to go, like, top 20 or whatever. And then when I got picked at 10, I was like, oh, okay. And then first time my brother tackled me, and I was like, this is really happening.
Yeah.
And then the whole family just went crazy.
Well, hopefully, luckily you didn't get injured.
But yeah, he was excited. My parents were excited. Everybody was just ecstatic.
Listeners that can't see, the smile on your face tells the story of how exciting it was to be drafted.
So how long did you have to pack up and get to extended spring training?
I had a decent amount of time because I didn't really sign. Because I had all the contract stuff worked out and stuff. So I really didn't sign until, I think, 2 weeks after I actually got drafted. So I had time to kind of settle in and stuff like that.
Did you go to Clearwater right away?
I did go to Clearwater. After I got drafted, I went to Philly. And I signed the contract and stuff in Philly. And then after that, after I signed, I went to Clearwater and started GCL.
So what was it like when you got down to Clearwater? You don't have school, so you don't have no more exams.
Weird.
But now you're on a structured schedule, right?
Right, yeah.
So what was it like adjusting to ball player as a profession schedule as opposed to ball player after school?
It was just a lot more, I would say. It wasn't really harder, I would say. Like, it wasn't like, because playing baseball. But you just do more. Like, you would go out, you would hit early. Then you would do like a fundamental, which should be like bunt plays or something like that. Or I do early work, which would be outfield drills. And then I would hit some more, eat lunch, play a game, and then go and hit some more. So it's like, it's just a lot more baseball. It wasn't really harder, but it's just more baseball. So.
What was it like when they brought you to Philadelphia to sign your contract?
Oh, it was,
you
know, it was unreal. Unreal.
Did you get to go in the stadium that day?
I watched, they brought me to a game. Sat in the box. They actually called my name out during the game. I did an interview while the game was going on. It was just...
Did you sit there and picture yourself in that uniform one day, looking at that field?
Yes. Yeah, I picture myself playing outfield in that. So it's just like, yeah, one day that'll happen.
So they bring you up to Philly. Who was the first player you wanted to meet?
First player I wanted to meet was Ryan Howard.
Who was the first player you got to meet?
I got to meet Utley. Utley was my first guy.
Did he say anything to you?
He was so, like, amped up. Like, I didn't know that's the type of guy he was, but, like, he's, like, high energy. He was like, hey, how are you doing? Yeah. I was like, I'm good. He's like, you want to hit? I was like, hey, yeah. And I was like, I don't have any of my stuff, though. He was like, I got bats, I got cleats, we can go do it. And I was like,
wait, this is the same Chase Utley who we can't get to say anything in an interview.
Yeah, he was just amped up, like, he's ready to go. And I was like, hey, how you doing?
So did you get to meet Ryan Howard?
I got to meet Ryan Howard, yeah.
Did he give you any advice?
He told me to stay hungry and keep, yeah, just work. Just have fun and work. So,
what's it like? You're 18, you're at the stadium, you sign your contract, Chase Utley's saying, let's come hit, now you're hitting with Chase Utley. Do you pinch yourself? Do you just, like, this is really happening?
Yeah, it was just like, I actually didn't hit, but he asked me to come hit and stuff like that, and I was just like, I wanted to hit, but then I was like, there's a lot of other things that went along with that, so I was like, no, I just stay back and watch y'all do the thing. But yeah, it was more so like, yeah, this is really happening, like, I'm out in the big leagues. I'm on a big league field. I'm talking to big league players. Like, there, I'm watching them hit balls in the second deck and stuff. And it's just like, one day I'll be doing what they're doing. So,
who'd you try and pattern yourself after coming up in terms of pros that you watched?
Robinson Cano.
Why?
He was just so smooth. Like, everything he does is just so smooth. Like, he just, it seems effortless. But I know he's out there playing hard. So it's like, that's the guy that I really love watching growing up.
What's it been like to go through the different levels of ball here in the organization? You're now at Double A. You're hungry, trying to make your way up. What's that climb been like? You had all this success growing up. You're drafted, and now you got to be patient.
Yeah.
You got to get the fundamentals.
That would be the biggest change. I mean, it's like everything just doesn't click. Everything just doesn't happen how you want it to happen. Because it's like in travel ball. High school, you hit 430, 440. You hit a pro ball. Not many guys do that.
I hit 440 in pro ball.
Yeah, so like, even my GCL year, when I hit 300, it was kind of like, what happened? Like, what's going on? And now I'm like, and then everybody was like, you had a really good year. And I'm like, that's not what I'm used to. So, and now it's just like learning. Now I'm hitting 190 or whatever, and it's like, all right, I kind of know what it's like to struggle kind of now, because I last 2 years, like my Lakewood year and my Clearwater year, I struggled at the beginning. So I know that numbers aren't everything. Numbers are going to change. You just got to keep a good approach every single day.
What's the biggest adjustment to Double A? I mean, a lot of people say that this is more of a hitter's league, but I would assume that you're seeing more change-ups and more off-speed stuff as you get higher in the system, which is harder to adjust to.
I mean, I would say I feel like the reason people say it's a hitter's league is because you start finally getting more stuff over the plate. Mm-hmm. You know, not over the plate, but more pitches to hit, I would say. The guys are around the zone more consistently. But at the same time, they can paint that fastball in, they can paint that fastball away. So there's two sides of that. It's like the first side is, okay, you get more stuff that you can hit, but the other side is you kind of have to get the pitch that you want to hit. Because that fastball in, you can hit it, but you probably can't do what you want to do with it. Or that fastball away, you can hit it, but you probably aren't going to hit it hard. So, I mean, that's like the two-edged sword of that.
Who, of all the pitchers you've seen, either on your team or on another team, who's the one that you said, wow, so far?
Wow, so far? We face Turnbull from the Erie on the other, like, probably a couple weeks back. We actually ended up beating him. But he had good stuff. He was, like, 97, 98, cutting it, sinking it. And, like, he was just, like this is a good arm. So, I mean, Suarez, of course, he throws really, like,
your teammate,
yeah,
Ranger.
Suarez.
Did you play with Sixto?
I played with him a little bit last year.
Yeah.
He's just freakish, like, 100, nasty slider, throw strikes. You don't see that. Like, you might see 100, but you don't see him throw strikes consistently.
Glad you don't have to hit against that.
I actually faced Dominguez in spring training a couple of times.
Who was that like?
He cuts it, sinks it, like, he throws, and now he can give a 98. So it's like, it was tough.
Now, he was your teammate, Earl.
He was my teammate.
A month ago, right?
Yeah, and he's in big leagues.
So do you get the chance to talk to him now?
I haven't talked to him since he got called up, but I talked to him a lot when he was here.
Mm-hmm. What's it like to see somebody who was across the locker room from you last month now doing it on the big stage?
It's a great feeling. It's a great feeling because, I mean, it's like you see the work that they put in. You see all the work that he's put in, all the little small adjustments that he's made. Because, I mean, I played with him last year and the year before that. So it's like I played with him for a while. So it's like just to see him in the big leagues is – it's a really good feeling.
All right, so when you get there, what's the number you want?
I probably won't get it.
What is it?
Two. Number two.
Oh.
Yes. Good luck with that.
All right.
What number were you in as a kid?
Number two. I've been number two all my life.
Why?
Birthday,
yeah.
June 2nd, Jeter.
Ah, there you go.
So those two things, it was like, yeah, number two, that's my number.
And what's going to be your walk-up music that first time you go to the plate?
That I really don't know. I don't know that yet.
We're going to come back, and we want to ask you the next time we get to interview you.
You've
got to think about that. You're going to make it there, so you're going to think about that.
I have an answer.
And what's the plan for the rest of the day? It's your 21st birthday.
My 21st birthday. Yeah.
So you got a ball game tonight?
I got a ball game tonight. You going to handle that?
Yeah.
He's gonna
can't talk about it afterwards.
I'm going to keep it PG.
So one question or one observation that I've had is we're here, it's now 1:30 in the afternoon. You guys have already been here for a while. I don't think people realize. People think you guys just show up to the park an hour before the game, right?
We just show up 5:30, 6 o'clock, right, play at 7.
So what's the regimen that you go through? Let's say tonight's a 6:30 game.
Yeah. It's usually 2 o'clock dress. I usually get in around 1:20, 1 o'clock, around that area. I come in. I usually eat lunch, get dressed, go foam roll, take care of my body, do my body prep. Today, I'm actually going to go. I'm about to go work out after this. Okay. After I work out, go in the cage, get my swings, get my feel of what I really want to do, like hitting the ball to left center, just feeling the barrel. After that, we'll have BP and all that stuff. BP infield probably, and after that, I'll probably hit in the cage some more off the machine. Then it's game time.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work every single day. Got to put in the work if you want to be top dog.
Yep,
got to put in the work.
You know what I learned from this episode of ours? Sports is fun.
That is right. Thank you so much for joining us this week. Make sure to join us next Friday night to help you start your weekend in style. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.